Moncrief on News Talk.
As you probably know, the US Democratic Senator Cory Booker set a new record for filibustering. Well, kind of filibustering. He took to his feet to make a speech and didn't sit down until 25 hours later. So is this just a political stunt? Does it achieve anything? Graham Finley from UCD joins us now to explain. Afternoon, Graham.
Afternoon.
So, but technically it wasn't filibustering because it wasn't a bill that he was blocking or anything.
Yeah, he wasn't trying to delay or prevent the passage of a bill, so he was just talking.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
About a lot of things.
He did talk about a lot of things. Actually, on that point, do any bills go through Congress nowadays? Do they do anything now?
They do. I mean, they have to keep the government open, so they often have a lot of emergency bills or continuing resolutions. It is really complicated, the actual rules under which Congress operates. But, you know, I mean, there are a lot of mandatory pieces of legislation, but though it's fair to say that over the last two or three Congresses, the last six, seven, 8 years, very little has been achieved in terms of legislation. They keep setting new records for the least legislation passed as a result of things like the filibuster, but also the severe polarization, which we're seeing in the American Congress. And the filibuster is a big part of it. You know, you need 60 senators to close debate, right? And otherwise, someone could, like Cory Booker did or Strom Thurmond did in 1957, talk and talk and talk until they can't talk anymore or can't avoid the bathroom anymore. But that actually doesn't ever happen because they know that it could happen, that you just, if you don't have 60 votes, you just can't pass a bill. So it does lead to some compromises, which then become, you know, the subject of debate outside the Congress.
Okay, but it maybe largely drags things out rather than it will kill a bill.
Yeah, I mean, and it's in a way it's a performance, and Cory Booker's was really a performance, and he kind of stayed on topic, whereas in the past people like, you know, Ted Cruz would just sort of read books into the record. If you've seen the film, and it's been a while for me, but Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, you know, he's doing all kinds of things to block a bill. It's a sort of statement that what's going on is so important that we need to draw attention to. We need to do something out of the ordinary.
Okay.
To sort of mark that and take a stand.
Yeah. But in the case of Cory Booker doing this, if you already, you know, half the population in the US already know something out of the ordinary is happening, the other half are dead in favor of it. So kind of what's the point of him doing that? And is it maybe, it just struck me that he was doing it to go, oh no, we're Democrats and we do have testicles.
Well, there's a lot going on, and I think that testicle point is well taken. I mean, so actually the majority of Americans disapprove of a lot of things Donald Trump is doing. The one exception might be migration, which already is very problematic from both a legal and constitutional point of view. But they, you know, Donald Trump doesn't care. And one of the reasons he doesn't care is that he's governing by executive order, by decree, if you will. And that is very constitutionally problematic and eventually will make its way up to the Supreme Court. So the Democrats, there isn't a lot for them to oppose in Congress because legislation is not being put forward to achieve all these goals. And they're also not getting the benefit of this disapproval of most of Trump's and Elon Musk's actions. So it is important for them to stand up and be counted, as it were. It seems to be working. I think I'd like to see the reaction sort of longer term if Cory Booker, who's no doubt burnishing his own presidential candidate credentials, gets a bounce and the Democrats get some traction with this.
Yeah. Okay. Now, the rules, didn't they amend the rules that you couldn't filibuster on, was it judicial appointments?
So the filibuster has a sort of longish history. You know, under the Articles of Confederation, there were a lot of supermajority, which is what a filibuster rule of 60 out of 100 senators is. You know, there were a lot of supermajorities required to do anything, and that meant they didn't do anything.
Yes.
And it didn't work, and that's why they had to go back again and try again with a new constitution, which is the one we have today. But they then didn't have any sort of mechanism to stop people talking. And so people could just talk and talk and talk and talk. So they came up with this rule about closing debate, cloture. And although they didn't necessarily call it at that time, in the early 19th century, around 1806, And it wasn't, you know, there wasn't a danger of people talking things out much over the course of the 19th century, or even for much of the early part of the 20th century. People tended to let, you know, to seek compromises or to try and reach out to the other side. It really came along with, in 1957, with civil rights acts. The Civil Rights Act of 1957 was the source of the previous record by Strom Thurmond, who was an arch segregationist, talking for 24 hours and 18 minutes. So his was the record Cory Booker was trying to beat. And he was trying to filibuster the Civil Rights Act so it will not come into force, because that, you know, in his views, this was a profound change to our American way of life, which, namely, treating black people like human beings. And so, you know, it was there was a lot more filibustering going on at that time, and accordingly, as other things got filibustered, or initially you could filibuster a nomination to head a government department. You know, and that eventually was seen as unconstitutional by Republican senators and by some senators, because it hampered the president's ability to get his people into office and to appoint officers of the United States. Then it was removed for judges, but except for Supreme Court judges. And then quite recently, Mitch McConnell removed it for Supreme Court judges so he could ram three justices onto the Supreme Court.
But would it be fair to say it's still kind of generally viewed as one of the cornerstones of debate, for want of a better word, within Congress?
It is a really important part of the American system, and it distinguishes it from parliamentary system. And it's directly relevant to what's going on here in Ireland right now. I mean, the government can, as we've seen, close debate with a simple majority. It can change the House rules and the standing orders by simple majority. It can appoint the Cean Chorla by simple majority. So it's a really powerful check on the majority's power. And filibustering throughout history, as it were, has always been a check on majoritarian power. And, you know, it seems quite important. And we're seeing the importance of this in our own contemporary society, because the opposition doesn't really have much of a choice.
Yes.
If it wants to delay some kind of action, if they see something as completely inimical to what Parliament should be doing, they have to disrupt using unparliamentary means if they want to put a brake on any kind of legislation. There hasn't been a lot of filibustering in Ireland. There are a couple of alleged filibusters that some rural independents tried to block an anti-drink driving bill a little while ago, and they were accused of filibustering. There was a bizarre Fianna Fáil-led, even though they were in government, filibuster in the Shannon over local policing commissions. But generally, you know, they you can't do it.
You can be shut down. Yeah, but you can do it there. Somebody wants to know, how can one man create such economic chaos with his silly tariffs? Don't Congress have to debate and vote on the proposals? What happened to the U.S. democracy's famed checks and balances?
Well, this is what we're going to find out, right? Because, again, he's doing all this by executive order, and he's imposing tariffs under the only conditions he can, which is to characterize it as a threat to American security. Eventually, this probably will be tested in the courts as well, because now that he's made tariffs his entire economic strategy, you know, it's got to be tested, because in theory, tariffs can only be imposed by Congress, right? And in theory, he should be applying the conditions of the U.S.-Mexico, Canada-Mexico free trade agreement, right? So, it is emblematic of how Donald Trump is ruling these days. And, you know, the whole world, and I think especially the United States, is kind of in shock.
Yeah. Who will test it in the courts, though?
Well, I mean, there's already a number of lawsuits heading up to the Supreme Court, and it can be states' attorney generals, and that we've seen a lot of Democratic state attorney generals bringing cases to district courts and so forth, and they move on up. But also individual companies and citizens can bring cases, to test the constitutionality and legality of what Trump is doing. I mean, many of his actions would seem to violate both constitutional principles, but also existing legislation. And the big one is all of the stuff they're doing on spending. There's the Impoundment Act, which was brought in to keep Richard Nixon from just not spending money, impounded by Congress or raised by Congress, and to spend it on something else.
Yeah. Right?
And Russell Vogt, the director of the budget, Trump's budget office manager, thinks that that's unconstitutional. But that's going to be the big test.
Right. OK. But it will go up to a Supreme Court appointed by him.
Yeah. And we're all wondering what's going to happen. We've had some early indications that maybe Roberts isn't so keen on this having a king thing. And Amy Coney Barrett voted with the liberal justices and John Roberts to sort of head off a couple things Trump was trying to do. But, you know, the Supreme Court seems to be holding its fire to see, to choose the exact point where they don't want to provoke the Trump administration into just ignoring a court order, which they're already sort of doing.
Yeah.
But, you know, because I think there is a really very real prospect that they're just not going to have checks and balances anymore.
That's what I was going to say, that it seems the checks and balances are being eroded if nobody pays any attention, because the checks and balances are voluntary to a degree.
No, it's quite quite an extraordinary time. And this talk about impeaching judges who rule against you is quite unprecedented. I mean, just because they rule against you. And, you know, John Roberts had to also break his silence to say that this was not on. You know, the normal way to, you know, deal with a decision you don't like is to appeal it. And I'm sure they'd hear it. So it is a very, very fraught time in the United States. And it, you know, it is partly because the polarization has meant that that real progress in the Congress isn't breaking down. But it's also just a tremendous appetite to rule by decree, which is quite extraordinary.
Well, which is essentially what he's doing. But like, has anyone used the number of executive orders he's used before?
No, I mean, this is entirely unprecedented. He signs so many that, you know, before it was kind of a big deal, but he'll be signing hundreds, you know, and he might not even know what's in them. But if you want to know what's in them, you just have to go to Project 2025, because they're just following it by item, you know. They really are doing all the things they said they would do.
Yeah, because it kind of often strikes me that he's signing so many of them that there's probably, and people might, you know, concentrate on the more dramatic ones, but there may be all sorts of other things he's putting into action that, you know, just haven't been reported on because there simply isn't room to do that.
Well, I mean, that's it. And they're often quite specific. And a lot of them, you just can't get rid of birthright citizenship by executive order. You can't get rid of a government agency by executive order. You can't entirely defund a government agency by executive order. But yeah, there are lots of little ones which, you know, if they affect you, you'll be very aware of them. But it's just hard to keep up. I mean, one reason why the Democrats just have not been very effective is it's just hard for everybody to keep up. The Trump administration is moving so fast and doing such dramatic things that I get the feeling the whole country is like a deer trapped in the headlights.
Oh, I think the whole world is. Back to Cory Booker, though, because a lot of people want to know the most important thing. Was he allowed a bathroom break at all?
There are rules about these things. Although, I mean, it's more like a Guinness Book of World Records kind of thing. He did not go to the bathroom, which is impressive. The clue, as Ted Cruz, who loves a good old filibuster himself, is not to drink a lot of water. Pro tip.
Yeah.
But Strom Thurmond, interestingly, was able to go to the bathroom about 3 and a bit hours into his filibuster, but that only once, right?
Okay.
And he asked sort of Barry Goldwater asked him if he could yield the floor to him, and Strom Thurmond agreed and ran to the bathroom, just like Cory Booker after his filibuster. But Strom Thurmond thought it was the bathroom thing which would eventually made him stop.
Yeah, it would make anyone stop. And he did, apparently his office says he didn't wear a nappy or no kind of aid there.
I don't know if people wearing nappies or catheters or whatever to filibuster. I mean, it would show a real commitment, frankly.
I would think.
The interesting thing about reform of the filibuster is, and this is actually, I think, one of my favorite political reforms ever proposed, is that if you're going to filibuster, you actually have to filibuster. Right. So none of this bogus 60 people filibuster, you know, oh, yeah, one of them could, you know, filibuster, you know, if you have less than 60. Right. But if you're going to filibuster, then filibuster.
OK. The first sentence out of his mouth was, I'm going to filibuster. He was quite open about it.
Yeah.
He was going to stay there on his feet as long as he could. OK, Graham, thanks a million for coming in to tell us about that. That was Graham Finley there, lecturing in the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.